It is March 22nd, 2005. This is the Subcommittee on Human Services for the House Ways and Means Committee. And we welcome you as we review important issues relating to priorities for children, for the Commission on Children and Families, as well as get some updated information on other children programs. I'd like to begin turning some time over to Sheila Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. Today we've asked Employment Department to come in to present an overview of child care in the state, because as we've listened to child care pieces in the Commission on Children and Families and the Department of Human Services, I think there's some interest in hearing what the big picture looks like. And so they will be presenting an overview to the subcommittee. And then we will go into the public hearing on the Commission on Children and Families to talk about the prioritized program listing. So as this committee has approached this and done a preliminary ranking of those programs, we'll talk about what the outcomes of those preliminary rankings are, and then you'll be able to ask questions to the commission staff, and there are county commission people in the audience as well, so that if you have questions of them, I'm sure we'll be happy to put them on the spot as well. So that's the plan for today. We had originally noticed the Department of Human Services starting on that discussion on their prioritized list. Because of bringing the child care discussion forward today, we don't expect that we will get to that Department of Human Services discussion until tomorrow, and then we will plan on doing that Wednesday and Thursday of this week.
Okay, thank you. For the record, we still have two of our committee members, or two that are out today and are excused. One, Jackie Winters, who probably is watching and listening to this right now, and we hope that she'll quickly come back and join us. Have a speedy recovery, Jackie. And then also Margaret Carter is excused today. So with that, we would like to begin with the Employment Department presentation. If we could have Debbie Lincoln and Tom Olson come forward.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Debbie Lincoln. I'm the director of the Oregon Employment Department, and as you know, one of our divisions, a very important division, is the child care division. And that's about all I'm going to say unless you want to ask me specifically questions. Tom Olson is administrator of the child care division. He's been with this program for a number of years and can, I think, answer all your questions. Thank you.
Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Tom Olson, the administrator of the child care division, and I've asked staff to hand out a brief overview in the event that you would like a little bit more information about what the child care division is and what our role is within the system. And if you, with your permission, I'll just do a very brief run-through and tell you a little bit about what we do.
Okay.
We are in the employment department, and that is sort of unusual for states. There are probably about six states that have a child care division within an employment or a workforce agency. In 1993, the legislature felt very strongly that they wanted the visibility of child care raised, and they wanted child care to be seen as a workforce issue as opposed to a welfare issue, and hence the work by the advocates and the legislature to make the move to the newly formed employment department at the time. The child care division, if you took out everything else that we do, our primary responsibility is the safety of kids in child care. We are also the federal lead agency for the federal funds that come to Oregon, and we act as kind of like a general contractor and work with all the other agencies and organizations to make sure those funds are spent in accordance with Oregon's child care plan. We work on, of course, safety issues. We license approximately 5,000 family and the certified child care facilities in the state. We work on affordability issues. We work with the Department of Human Services and the Commission on Children and Families to make sure that funds go out to the local communities and through the Department of Human Services employment-related daycare program to provide subsidies to low-income working families, which is an important part of the way that the funds are spent. We also work on accessibility, and that's a big role for the Commission on Children and Families. We provide funds to the Commission that go out to the local communities. Then they use those in accordance with their individual county plans to work on projects that are important to them for child care within each county, and very often that is an issue of supply. In many counties, especially rural counties, child care is very hard to find. Other types of child care that's difficult, of course, is non-traditional hour child care, child care for sick children, that sort of thing. And that's where the counties play a very important role. We also work on the quality of child care, and we do that a lot through professional development. We contract with Portland State University to provide training to child care providers. Research has shown that the most important element in how children grow and progress and whether child care is high quality is the education level of the provider. So we work together with the entire child care system to try to make as many training opportunities as possible for child care providers so that they can do the best job that they possibly can. Within the employment department ourselves, we also have a small subsidy program that works at with what we call high-risk populations. And those are migrant and seasonal farm worker programs, like the Oregon Center for Community Development in Woodburn. They have migrant facilities all over the state. We have a program that meets the needs of parents who have children with special needs or disabilities. We have a program that that provides child care services for parents that are in substance abuse treatment, often court-ordered. And we have a program that supports teen parents in the school so that they continue to pursue their education even though that they have a child. We work very closely with a number of partners. I've mentioned the Department of Human Services and the Commission on Children and Families. We also work very closely with the Commission on Child Care. And that, of course, is an 18-member commission that is appointed by the legislature and by the governor to advise on the needs and policy needs of child care in Oregon. We also work with a large group of partners called the Childhood Care and Education Coordinating Council, and the Coordinating Council serves as the planning body for Oregon's federal child care plan every 2 years. And it's the folks that are at the program level on the ground. It's people from all the agencies. We have a number of parents involved. We have child care providers. We have advocates. It's sort of a big town meeting that that we use to focus our efforts on child care in the state and to make sure that what we do with the child care funds is what the people want done with it. Funding for child care is a bit complicated. There is a small amount of state general fund in child care, in the child care division, about $3.5 million. For our entire budget of approximately $120 million of biennium, the bulk of that fund, $117 million approximately, is federal child care and development fund funding. And the federal funds come with a certain number of rules and restrictions. The federal funds have three funding streams. Mandatory funds, which account for about $19 million per year. That's the old entitlement program back from the time when we had aid to families with dependent children back in the early 90s. Matching funds are, again, sort of entitlement funds, but states have to show that they spend a certain amount on child care to draw down those funds. And discretionary funds, which are just that. They are funds that Congress appropriates each year, and the states can use in ways that they choose, and in Oregon we choose to use them primarily to enhance child care quality and professional development of child care providers. The funding requirements, federal funds also come with a number of requirements. I mentioned the matching funds. In Oregon we have to come up with 60% of the money in order to draw down the federal funds. And we do that in Oregon primarily through the availability of our child care tax credits, our working family tax credits, which are now refundable, which gives us a legitimate source of matching funds that we can use to draw down millions of dollars of federal funds. We also have to show maintenance of effort, and that means that we have to go back to the time before the TANF program was last reauthorized and show that we're spending as much money as we did back in 1995 or 1996. We have a choice. And then there's a non-supplantation requirement. The states are required to show that they are not supplanting federal funds with state, or I should say general funds with state funding, with federal funding. So in other words, the state money that's spent on child care is intended to stay in child care and not to be supplanted. The last page is a pie chart that shows how federal funds are spent, and you can see that the bulk of the funding is spent on subsidy program in the Department of Human Services. That's everything from the employment-related daycare program to the jobs program. going around clockwise after the big gray pie, you see $1.2 million. That's funding that we use to support Head Start in the state through grants through the Department of Human Services. We use that for wraparound services to provide full-day, full-year programs for kids who are Head Start eligible. Up above that, $3 million is the funds that are granted to the counties. And again, those are used for building supply or doing provider professional development or whatever the county's plan priorities happen to be. A small amount of funds goes to the Department of Education, and that is to work with school districts to develop teen parent programs.
You know, we don't have color, so when you say a small amount, is that
right? That's the 0.37.
Okay.
And one of these days when we can print in color again, I can probably do a better job with this.
What was the number for counties?
The counties is $3.3
million. Mr. Chair, Tom, that $3.3 million, is that the funding that goes through the Commission on Children and Families?
That's correct.
To counties.
Okay. Then there's approximately $9.9 million that we spend on child care licensing. And that's held within the child care division, and it funds approximately 74 positions that we have in 12 offices around the state that license approximately 5,000 child care facilities. Moving on from that is $6.1 million. Those are we use for the subsidies for the high-risk populations. Those are the folks, the migrant seasonal farm workers, the teen parents, the kids with special needs and disabilities. And then we get to resource and referral. We fund them in about $3.9 million biennium, and resource and referral agencies are mandated in our legislation. The state's required to provide them. And resource and referral agencies, there are now 17 of them throughout the state, and they provide services to parents. They specifically provide referrals for parents that are looking for child care. They provide a database of the child care available within their community. They work with businesses to work with them on business and work-life solutions that involve child care or dependent care. And they also coordinate training for child care providers and put together training programs in their communities. And then last, at the top of the pie chart, the $1.2 million is the money that we contract specifically with Portland State University to provide professional development training. Some of you may have heard of the Oregon Professional Development Registry, or it's now called the Oregon Registry. And that's it's a very sophisticated system that allows providers to progress on a series of steps that shows how much training or education that they've had. And this training or education does not necessarily have to be formal. It doesn't have to be community college-based or campus-based. It can be training that they've taken in the community, and it's a way to document that training and show how each provider progresses professionally, and it's a way for them to document their training and to tell the parents how much training that they've had. So that, in a really fast overview, is the child care division and what we do. And I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions on child care, federal, or in the employment department. Senator Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You still serve on the Commission for Children and Families Advisory, correct? Or the I remember we had a bill a couple of sessions back to get you as part of the Commission Children. Did that ever happen?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mona Sanderson, yes, it did. And the choice is to either to have the director of the department on the commission or the chair of the Child Care Division or Child Care Commission. And for about a year, the chair of the Child Care Commission sat on the Children and Families Commission. When that chair left, then I took that seat directly, so I now sit on the Commission for Children and Families.
And follow up, is there much, has it helped in, has it helped child care? Has it helped the Commission? Has it helped on networking?
Mr. Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, I think any time you bring those folks together, people with special expertise together. I think the biggest issue is that Tom is our expert. I'm not particularly the expert, so I certainly count on staff. And Tom's involvement in a whole variety of partnerships and meetings and his network itself is probably more helpful than my being on that commission. If I had my druthers, I'd have Tom sit on the commission itself because then it would be a direct connection. But I think the two commissions need to work very, very closely, and it's important to have that kind of connection.
Mr. Chair, just as a comment, I had served on the Child Care Commission for a year, or about a year, and I really liked how the commission worked because they were so focused on child care and could really address child care, and it seemed like, wow, this is how a business should run, and because I know there had always been talk of, you know, putting this into the Commission on Children and Families, but if that ever happened, it should be nice to just keep that subset because they're so productive and so really into addressing the child care issues as their own. Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Bates.
Mr. Chair, how much time did you set aside or just how much of a discussion do you want these issues? I was, you know, we're looking at overlapping programs, obviously. I understand that.
And, we
could go into all kinds of things. These kind of, we looked at this last session. I was on the committee that reviewed this and tried to look at outcomes, and it was tough to find any. And we could spend hours on this. I assume this has been reviewed by another committee, and that data should be available to us.
Actually, I'm on that committee as well, and they're reviewing. It's 30,000 foot review. And so because of our focus on children and families today, it would be appropriate to spend another 15 or 20 minutes if you would like to drill in on some of this so that we can we're trying to coordinate children and families and see how there's this cross relationship. What are your thoughts?
Mr. Chair, I would like to see the outcomes for resource referral and quality initiatives. I mean, how many people are being trained, what kind of referrals being made, how's that money being used? And I had questions about the big part of the program is obviously the subsidies. That's almost $100 million. And does any of that flow into the Head Start programs? Because they do some child care also. Where does that money actually go? How it's being used? Is it direct subsidies to families and they basically use it as a voucher? I know some of that happens. But I don't know the answer to those questions, and I don't know how much detail we have time to go into here.
Well, we could turn to the chart that shows federal funding streams and maybe begin by discussing the discretionary funds and tell us, you know, how discretionary is that? What is the division? How does it mainly get spent? Just if you could give us more information about that.
Yes, Mr. Chair. We spend discretionary funds in accordance with our federal plan. Every 2 years we're required to develop a plan that tells the federal government kind of what we're doing with the money and how we collaborate with other state agencies. And again, the federal plan originates with the Childhood Care and Education Coordinating Council. And everybody that's involved with child care is at that table. Department of Human Services has a number of members from substance abuse programs to the ERDC, the Employment-Related Daycare Program, to mental health evaluation programs. Commission on Children and Families sits at that table. The Department of Education is at that table.
Yeah.
Everybody that has a stake in child care is at that table. And as a group, this council has come up with a vision for child care in Oregon that they call the child care infrastructure. And the infrastructure is what they believe the basic tenets of child care should be and what the basic program should be involved. And we use the discretionary funds primarily to fund those programs. For instance, quality, the discretionary funds are used for child care quality. They fund the child care resource and referral systems. And as Senator Bates was asking if we have any data on child care resource and referral, yes, we have a lot of data on it. We can tell you exactly how many parents were served, exactly how many hours of training were coordinated. We can practically tell you to the moment. We do time studies on what they do and to understand how best to fund them. And we can tell you exactly what they're up to, what they've done, and what their performance rates are. And
do you have a report already put together in-house?
We actually have the Child Care Resource and Referral Network, that's the coordinating body for the 17 different branches, puts that information together, and I can get you a copy of that tomorrow, or probably this afternoon.
That'd be great. Thank you. Would others like to have a copy? I mean, is that electronic?
Mm-hmm. We can. I think we can do it electronically, sure.
Why don't you just email it to us?
Okay. I can do that.
Thank you.
We also spend a lot of the discretionary funds, not a lot of the discretionary funds, but some of the discretionary funds go to professional development and training. And by that, like I say, it goes to fund the Oregon Registry programs, and it also goes to fund child care curriculum for child care providers. We've got a complete basic curriculum for folks that want to go into child care. The first modules, first set is a five-module set that deals with child care health and safety issues, and there's a second set that deals with child social and emotional development. And by the time the providers go through those, they have a very good understanding of how children develop and what the safety rules are for the for children in the state and what they should be doing within their profession. We also provide some funding to school-age programs. At Portland State University has a program that coordinates training for school-age program providers in the state. We've also funded a number of pilot projects. We have one that's providing health consultation to child care providers in four counties in the state, and we're working to regionalize that program. It's been very successful in providing information to providers on what to do, you know, if you have whooping cough in your area, and or what to do if there's a particular disease in your child care center, or if there are issues that the children are experiencing that are behaviorally related, you know, they'll help with that too. We have a program right now that's we're piloting up in Multnomah County with the Commission on Children and Families and two Oregon foundations that will try to find a way to assess child care quality within a community so the community can assess whether or not the child care that's provided there meets a certain standard. Portland was very interested in that information when they did their special mill levy for early childhood, and at that point in time they had no information about whether or not child care in their area was particularly high quality, and so they didn't allow child care providers to apply for that money. Well, we're going to solve that. And it's going to be a national pilot, and it's a way of looking at how well child care is provided. We also have several pilots in the state that are working on a program that you'll probably see a bill for later on in the session. It's called Oregon Cares. This has been around for a while, and I've seen the bill surface again. And what the Oregon Cares Project is a program that reimburses child care providers for their step on the professional development registry, on the Oregon registry, so that if they reach a certain training level, then they get a stipend in their check every year. And in the areas where we're piloting that, we have found over about the year and a half that it's been going that we have really reduced the turnover rate amongst child care providers. And that's fairly important because one of the elements of quality is the amount of time a given provider spends with a given child. If you have teachers constantly churning through a program, it's not very good for the children. Stability is very good for young children. And that's sort of in a nutshell is the areas where we spend our discretionary funds. As I said, the mandatory funds and the matching funds, those are the federal entitlement dollars, and they're targeted under federal regulations primarily to child care subsidy programs. And we do contract. We have a contract directly with the Department of Human Services that specifies what the funds can be used for under the federal regulations and gives them some direction around how the funds should be spent.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up. Senator Bates.
On the federal funds, can any of that go in? Do the Head Start programs qualify for any of that money?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, we do spend those federal funds on Head Start. We have Oregon is one of the few states that has a really good, what we call a Head Start wraparound program. And we work with Head Start centers. And what we do is we provide money through the Head Start program to provide child care services to kids who are in Head Start because, as you know, Head Start's a part-day program and it only operates part of the year. And so in some cases, what these Head Start programs do is they'll contract with a network of family child care providers, let's say, in their area, so that when the child gets done with Head Start, they will then be taken directly to their child care provider, and then the child care provider will be reimbursed for the funds to provide care for the rest of the day. The models are different all over the state. The Department of Human Services operates that program through their subsidy dollars, and I'm sure they'll be happy to talk with you about that in detail about how it works.
That's a whole additional issue. I was recently looking at the federal reports for Jackson County, Josephine County Head Start, and they service 811 children with 267 employees at a rate of about over $9,000 per child per year. And Washington County's has 700 and some children, and the rate works out to over $8,000 per year per child for that those that are serviced just in those two organizations, not including any state money.
I think you said 90. I think you meant 9,000.
Excuse me, over 9. Did I say 90,000?
Yeah.
9,000, excuse me.
I think the figure I saw was there, 9,000. Yeah. But to follow up with this, if I could, do you have any idea what the administrative cost of getting that money out to those programs is? And do you have any idea how much of the federal money actually goes into Head Start programs? Also, I know some Head Start programs are talking about being 12-month programs and not transferring kids to daycare centers, but maintain the kids after
right.
school. And,
right.
And they're starting to incorporate preschool programs, starting these kids that are at risk early. We're starting to see some gains from that. Do you have any comments about that? How much do you interface with the Head Start programs?
We interface with the Head Start program on a fairly regular basis. Again, they are in the planning process that determines how the federal funds are spent. The federal funds cannot be used specifically for Head Start services. They're funded through a separate stream through an entirely different federal agency. What we can do is we can enhance Head Start services by providing child care to fill in the rest of the day. And the folks that have these contracts also try to look for child care that is very high quality, because the kids in Head Start, of course, tend to be to have a need for the highest quality care that they can receive, so they can get the best start possible. To answer your question directly, too, it's $1.2 million biennium that we currently put into what we call the Head Start wraparound program. And again, it does not fund Head Start itself. What it does is it funds out of Head Start time, shall we say, for kids who need child care for the rest of the day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further comments or questions? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wonder how we've had this conversation before, but how we tie together those funds that are subsidizing low-income families with those that, through the Commission on Children and Families, through relief nurseries, through the child care and development funds, and through DHS, those child care funds. Again, I feel like we need to have an understanding of how those all come together, and I don't know if you can help us, you know, complete the circle.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, speaking of circles, let's see. I don't think I have enough qualities or copies for the committee here, but I have a copy of. I'll just bring this up. What I've got here, and let's take a look.
All right, we can share. Yeah. Literally speaking of circles.
Yes, literally speaking of circles. Someone refers to them as Tom's Crop Circle.
Okay.
And basically what this shows is the child care system. This is from the child care system perspective. But if you'll notice down on the bottom, the circle down on the bottom is Partners for Children and Families. And that's a group that I'm sure Mickey will be happy to tell you more about, that is led by the Child Care Commission. And it's to do exactly that. It's to bring all the partners to the table. We have, within child care, we have a huge, very coordinated partnership. But then there's a lot of things that are outside of child care that touch it, like child mental health, like delinquency prevention programs, crisis relief nurseries, things that are tangential. And Partners for Children and Families is where we try to bring all that information together at one area to meet the intent of the legislation, that services be delivered in a planful manner and in accordance with the state commission plans. And so child care obviously plays into that, and many, many other services do too. And we try to work at, we have, like I said, we have representatives from every state agency on this group and on our coordinating council, so that every grant that comes to the state that has any relationship to child care or anything related to early childhood really is coordinated through the Partners for Children and Families process, so that we all try to work together to make sure that, number one, we're not duplicating efforts, and number two, that we're doing what everyone in the field believes is best practice and in the best interest of kids.
Follow up.
I'm just as a general point of discussion, and maybe Ms. Baker, you can help us with this. It would be interesting for this committee and others as well to assimilate the dollars spent in child care, low income subsidy child care, through the combination of agencies, so that we had a pretty good idea of the number of children served and the dollars spent against that.
Mm-hmm. That would be
And Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, I can also get you that information because we track exactly how many families we serve through the subsidy program and how many families we serve through the targeted populations program, and we can do the math for you, too.
Great. Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Especially the help with math.
We can use the help with math. Other questions or comments? Are there... Is there anything else that you think would be helpful for us as we consider the utilization of resources for children and families?
Yeah.
We now have a better idea of what you do, but we don't have the depth to know what other areas we ought to even be looking at. Just if you were up here, what questions would you be asking?
Mr. Chairman, you're asking the right questions. One of the things that I guess I'd like you to know is that in Oregon, I've worked in three other states at either a cabinet level or a coordinating level, and Oregon has the most collaborative system of any state I have ever been involved with. It almost gets to the point where we spend more time with our partners than we do with our families. And Partners for Children and Families is a good name for this, because I sometimes wonder which one I'm partnering more with, the children or my family. But we really do know what each other does. We really do talk to each other, and I think as a group, we really do have in mind the fact that we need to spend resources wisely and in the best possible interest of kids. And I've just never seen it done better. It's not perfect, but it's about as close to perfect as I've seen. I really have to say that. The partnership works better here than any place I've ever seen. There are always going to be questions, but if I were in your chair, it's impossible really to come down from your chair and sit in all the partnership activities that we do together and all the collaborative processes that we do together. I wish you could send committee staff to a Partners for Children and Families meeting and a Coordinating Council meeting and get some flavor for how it is and the give and take and the fact that we do have parents involved, we have advocates involved, we have child care providers involved. It isn't just the state agencies carving up the pie. It's a group of really committed people really trying to make the best decisions they can with the resources they have. And I will also say that Oregon does more with its limited, very limited resources in child care than any state in the union, and I think anybody that knows the Oregon system will tell you that. It's we're not perfect, but we're real good.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add to what Tom said about what you might want to be looking at, it might be useful to talk to a member or two of the Commission on Child Care, talk a little bit about the work they've done on looking at financing for child care. There is a big effort with the Child Care Resource and Referral Network to bring businesses into an understanding of what child care means for the workforce and how businesses might support child care in general. And there's a person who you may want to talk to who does that. So those may be some of the questions you'd want to ask in terms of child care in general, is how does the business community get involved, what the financing needs are, what the impact is when there is a great deal of turnover or child care providers aren't paid adequately, what the workforce needs of the child care provider community are. And we can help connect you with all those resources who could talk to you about those kinds of things.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Moss-Anderson.
Thank you. I know that it's always been an issue of actually getting certified child care centers, and I know that we had only had 4 years ago one that was actually went through the process to be certified. Can you shed light on that issue with child care providers and how we're doing in that realm?
Representative Richardson, Senator Moniz-Anderson, I think what you're referring to is accreditation.
Accreditation, right.
Accreditation is it's one of, we're developing a set of what we call structural quality indicators around this pilot in Multnomah County, and accreditation is one of them. And accreditation is something that that's tough for child care centers. It's a national process. Some of you may know about JCAH, the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Hospitals, for instance. It's a process similar to that. In order to become accredited, you have to spend a good deal of money, and you have to go through a long self-examination process. Then people from other states come to your facility, do an analysis, and they write it all up, and you go back and tell you what you need to do. And the process goes on for a couple of years. As a result, we don't have a whole lot of accredited child care facilities in the state. I think we have like 13 now.
Wow.
And the reason for that is that some of the for-profit child care centers require that some of the national folks require that their centers be accredited. But it's not a process that's easy. And the way to really jumpstart it and to make it happen, because accreditation does tie to quality, would be to somehow reimburse or to incent those centers that are accredited. Right now, if you do it, child care is a very competitive market. We don't have many state dollars at all in child care. We're pretty much a federally funded program, and we pay very, very poorly in Oregon for child care. The federal government likes states to show that they spend at 75% of the market rate. That means that if you have a voucher in your hand for child care services and there's 100 providers in your area, you should be able to afford 75 of them with that voucher. In Oregon, you can afford about 21 of them. And it's because that we don't fund child care like many other states do in terms of state funds. So that being said, that's really the reason why there's very little push for accreditation. Some states reward programs that get accredited. They actually, those programs can charge more dollars, and state subsidy program can pay them more dollars. But it's not, we have so few subsidy dollars to go around here. We try to serve the maximum amount of people that we can. And that's kind of a long answer to your question. I hope that got to the point.
Yeah, well, from one back in 2001 when I was on the commission,
right.
13 is
yeah.
a big
it's,
step.
It, it is. It's going forward, and we're really trying to address it through the quality indicators too. We think that's another way that we can get there as kind of an Oregon solution, because it will be a way. The indicators of quality look at things like the ratio of staff to children, the size of the group, the number of valid complaints they've had, the amount of turnover they have with their providers, the amount of compensation they pay to their staff. And looking at those things, it'll give communities and other child care facilities a snapshot of how they're doing. And it'll give parents kind of like a list of options when they go in for a consultation with their resource and referral agency, rather than just telling them, well, here's a list of child care providers, you know, go find one that you like. They will be able to give more information to that parent, and they'll be able to say, well, this is their ratio of, you know, this is a really low ratio facility. Your kid's going to have more individual attention, and tell them what those indicators mean, and they'll come away with more information. And we're going to try to get to higher quality and more of an accreditation-like scenario through that sort of a model. It's very cost-effective.
Follow up. Are relief nurseries and part of the child care provider network that would become accredited, or is that entirely different? Is it daycare or child care different?
Right.
Different.
This is Chair Richardson and Senator Montes Anderson. Yes, they are very different types of animals. Some relief nurseries actually do provide child care, but they're more on the child abuse and neglect side of the situation. We're on the workforce side.
Okay.
They work specifically with kids who need to be gotten out of home for whatever reason. In some cases, they do provide a child care component, and we are able sometimes to actually count a little bit of what they do in terms of our maintenance of effort for the federal funds. But they're really not child care. They're really more of a treatment program and an intervention program for families at high risk.
Yeah, Representative Henson, and then Senator Bates.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm concerned a little more globally. I mean, we spend a great deal of effort in terms of child care as it matches with employment patterns. And most people are working, you know, 40 hours a week, maybe some different shift schedules. How would it impact child care if our education system moved to a year-round school if we had year-round Head Start, if we had a focus on extension of the school day so that it was matching up more with the working hours that people put in, maybe through the community school effort, or but has there been talk in terms of changing some of our external things to better to ease people's ability to match child care with their work hours?
Chair Richardson, Representative Hansen, that's a really good question. There, of course, has been a discussion. There's always a discussion about if we could make better use of school facilities. And the schools certainly have a role to play in child care. They're so separately local control of school districts makes it difficult to to make something happen globally. Something isn't necessarily going to happen just because a state agency tells them to do that. I think that they have a role to play, but I don't think necessarily that they're ever going to replace the need for childcare, especially for parents who work shifts. School buildings, for instance, aren't going to be open 24/7. In Oregon, we have a fairly high proportion of family child care providers, and that's really where the non-traditional hour care is provided. Child care centers tend to operate from 7 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night. Family child care can operate any time that they want to, and there are some that actually provide 24/7 child care, especially in communities that have shift work, like in the Albany area. And I don't think that I think the schools, of course, could possibly do more in terms of providing after school care, especially out of school time care. But I think that their role would be fairly limited in actually replacing child care.
Okay, let's go one final one. Then
yeah, I mean the segue was perfect because that's what I wanted to ask about. I don't know what the numbers, but I would guess the vast majority of child care occurs after school until that parent gets home, and it's Monday through Friday. I might be surprised to find there's a lot of shift work and weekend work when child care is necessary, but my experience has been that that's not the case.
Right.
The school's reluctance to open those schools up and maintain those kids at the school, which seems to me, for school-age children, to be the logical place to have your child care. It's just common sense to me, I'm sorry. And not shift kids all over town, running buses and kids and parents wondering where their kids are half the time seems to me totally illogical. So my question is, what's your relationship with the school system? I don't see K-12 people here. I don't see them as part of the discussion. I've brought this up before in committee. And it's always been kind of a blank spot. I know one school, White City, in our area, which is up right now for a major award for the work they've done in bringing social services into their school building, bringing in an after-school program for child care in their system. So I know it can be done. Question is, why is that not a major push by your organization to do that instead of doing it sort of the traditional way, which was nice in 1957 when a few families were working, both four partners, and has changed dramatically since then, and we just haven't caught up to it. So what's your relationship with K-12?
Representative Richardson and Senator Bates, our relationship with K-12 is probably the most challenging of our relationships. We have a very close relationship with early childhood education in the Department of Education, I think I think in Oregon, and I don't want to go too far down this slippery slope because I am not an expert on the K-12 system, but I do know that in Oregon they have their own set of problems to deal with, and they seem to be struggling just to deal with the school hours that they currently have. And I don't know how to get to the fact where that they would be able to afford to keep their schools open for more hours. I think it would be a wonderful idea. I think after-school programs, out-of-school time programs are really a great answer to a lot of these problems. I wish I could tell you how to get there. I can't.
Mr. Chair, can just real quick follow up on this particular topic. Thank you.
Go ahead.
The Gresham-Barlow School District has done this, has partnered with daycare providers who would come into the school. And I was on the school board at the time that we were doing that. And it's been an up and down issue because teachers do not like to relinquish their classrooms or libraries, convert their libraries, because things get messed up and things get lost and things get misplaced. So it's really a logistic issue more than the schools not wanting to have it in the school system. But I agree. It works well. I loved it because I used it when my children were in grade school, and it was so convenient.
I think it's a turf issue.
Yes.
And you're wise in your response. It's very guarded. Certainly, if it's a policy issue that's going to have iconoclastic type of impact, it shouldn't come from that side of the dais. And so that's our job to look at that.
Mr. Chair.
One final comment before we move on to the...
Extending the bus route could help solve the problem.
Like, to be on the buses longer, and that way
yeah.
that takes care of some
yeah.
of the child.
Have them come down to Salem and back. And
well, but then it'd be hazardous duty pay for the bus drivers. We appreciate very much your information, and we look forward to getting that additional information that you could provide to us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Director. All right. Yes, we're going to move on to the Commission's prioritized list. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5505, and we would like to invite those. Mickey, if you'd come forward, actually just yourself for now, and if there's others that need to be involved, we can do that. We can invite you to come up as it occurs. We're now going into a discussion of priorities, and every committee is handling this a little differently. We as a committee have submitted our own opinions as to what the priorities should be, taking into consideration what the Commission has provided as priorities. And we, through the able work of Sheila Baker, have had this calculated and averaged so that we can see how what we submitted as a committee fit in with the recommendations that were provided by your agency. So as we look at it, what I'm looking for are serious discrepancies in opinion that we might need to talk out. And so I'd like to begin by just asking if the committee, which is now only three of us, I've had the opportunity to look down this list. If you could, this could be a short meeting. Why don't we look down the list and see if there's areas where we have obvious discrepancies that could interfere with reaching a consensus, and then we can discuss those discrepancies and also ask any questions that we might want to have as follow-up from while Mickey's here. Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and spin the format a little.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, the way we've put this preliminary presentation together, you'll see there's three shaded columns over to the left of the information that the commission initially provided as its prioritized list. And so based on the rankings that we got from individual members, we've done mathematical magic here, basic sort of fourth grade adding and dividing, and come up with a preliminary ranking, which is shown in the first column. So the first ranking would be the Children, Youth, and Families local grant. Then the second and third are ties in terms of our averaging, and so on through the 14 items that the commission had identified. Then the second column over shows the average score. So again, just a straightforward average of the scoring that was received by the individual members. And that's what determined the relative ranking placement. And then the third column shows the range. So for example, on the first one, there were at least one vote for ranking that number one. There was at least one vote for ranking that number five. So it shows the range of scores. So okay. That's where I think as you're looking down the columns and the rankings, you can see where people pretty much agreed or where there was as the committee chair indicated, some wide variations in terms of scores.
Thank you. There's two that there seems to be a fairly wide spread, and that is one of them is number 7. One of the committee members put as high as a 2 and one as low as an 11, and this deals with juvenile crime prevention funds, and so maybe we ought to just have I'll take a moment and read through this and see if we need to have any discussion on it. It says, juvenile crime prevention funds are distributed to the counties and tribes to prevent delinquency in high-risk youth and provide staff to support communities in their efforts and to support the state's juvenile crime prevention and juvenile justice advisory committees. And the average, by the way, is 7. The number is 7, so what it means is that your consensus and our consensus ends up the same if they get averaged out. Any thoughts or comments on this, Senator Ron Sanderson? Or
I tend to find this process extremely difficult, and I'm only guessing that the reason the range was lower on the list for some is because of the amount of money spent on advisory committees, et cetera, and they would rather have money going directly to the families.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hansen.
I'm also wondering on that is because it's moving over from, see, currently it's housed with
Criminal Justice Commission.
That I'm wondering if there's maybe some of the adverse rankings based on where it should be housed, not necessarily the value of the program.
Okay. Let's go on to number 9. We have a tie for 9 and 10. That's the second one on the second page, and it's SSTA. We have a range that went from 4 to 13 on this one. State staff technical assistance to counties program are state staff who support local commissions on children and families by providing technical assistance in implementing their local comprehensive plans using evidence-based practices, assisting in systemic development such as early childhood and youth development systems and program monitoring.
Again, Mr. Chair, some counties, I feel, are spending so much time on the evaluation process, and that's taking, again, we need to have the evaluations because that's how we get our evidence-based outcomes. But in some circumstances, it seems that so much time is being put into the evaluation process and not enough, and more time should be spent going directly to families. So, again, I think that's why there's the range that it is.
Yeah. There's sometimes too great of an emphasis on complying with reporting requirements that you don't get the job done, or
exactly.
It's taking substantial assets away from it. Representative Hansen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's one of the dichotomies that we're stuck with. We all want performance-based budgeting, good accountability, and yet it's expensive to get it and expensive to take care of it. I may have rated it somewhat lower. Only from a standpoint, I think it's important work that needs to be done. But again, we're talking about priorities, and if I was going to cut the money somewhere, it would be there rather than the local
programs.
Funds, because I would think the local funds, if the locals were commissions were prioritizing, they would probably, I would hope, if they needed the assistance, they would buy it back from the state commission. And so it's not saying necessarily that the work's not needed. It was more of a, which would the funding device be? Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
yeah.
Bonner.
And I concur because right now we're in a cutting mode. I mean, we don't have the revenues, and therefore I think the message I would like to send to the commission is we need to try to keep services to families and maybe let up on some of the requirements or some of the funding that has gone to maintain it, and hopefully over time we'll be able to add back, because it is, I mean, we do need to have the evaluations.
I have a question on how this line relates to the number 13, where you have, you know, again, you staffing. You know, why do we have a separation between these two areas?
Chair Richardson, this has been a historic way in which our budget has been put together. I can't say that it is the best way, but the staff in the 9-10 column are the staff that directly go out, spend time with the counties. That is their sole responsibility. So they are out in the counties all the time. Doesn't mean that the rest of the policy and support staff are not supporting counties, because they are in a variety of ways. But these are people like our deployed person east of the mountains, who is housed in Enterprise, Oregon, who does nothing but go from county to county. We have two people in Salem that go to county on the western side. We have our person who's our data policy analyst, who's into research and best practices, who is constantly talking to counties. It is those people who are specifically related to a programmatic or a systemic area where they are, that's their sole responsibility.
I see. Well, we were asked to come up with a consensus, and so we have this information, and it's been compiled. Is there anyone on our committee that feels that we need to go into greater detail on any one of these issues so that we can have that consensus?
Mr. Chair, I found it interesting to look through sort of the ranges and some of the preliminary rankings that overlaid on this sheet. And, I suppose we could discuss it further, but as I looked through it, it seemed to match what my thoughts were and what I heard us discuss at various times. We could spend more time going through it, obviously, but I'm not sure it would change our feelings or thoughts about anything.
That's
and I thought it was, this is a smaller agency we can actually work with. The DHS is, you know, sort of mind-boggling.
That's true.
And difficulty. The one thing I would like to spend a moment discussing, and people comfortable doing it, is block granting. I've had discussions at the local level in my counties, and there are individuals there who are anxious about a block grant. They're not anxious. They're a little anxious about taking on the responsibility of a program, and being really truly responsible for what those monies do. Others are very anxious to take on the program. They feel they can do a better job if it's block granted to them. And I would say that on the local level, I think the sense is very much in favor of a block grant, the vast majority. But there are some individuals who have come to me and said that, you know, I like the oversight by the state. I like the accountability from the state, and so there's a mixture here. And I think getting a movement towards a block grant is going to be a mixture of those two things. It'll be a block. If we do go in that direction, I think it'll be a block grant with still a few strings attached for some outcomes, something reasonable, but a significant change as far as getting it down at the local level.
With the additional authority to use the money comes the additional responsibility to assure that it's used appropriately. When you are implementing somebody else's program, then it's not your fault if it doesn't work. If
right.
You have the responsibility to assure that things are done well and you're given the means to do it, that gives a lot of a lot more pressure for performance. So I think that may be part of it. And certainly any change is also always resisted.
Absolutely. And the people that were most concerned were really kind of in the mindset, well, if I do this and I report this, then I'm okay and I don't have to worry about anything else, versus if I get this, I've got to have an outcome that really affects children.
Right.
You know, am I really getting the job done or not? And that's a big leap for some of them, and makes them a little fearful. But yet I think it's where we need to go.
I think we're going to head in that direction. Representative Hansen.
Well, just a couple comments. And I think this is where some of the uncertainty in terms of our process shows up. Of if we were doing a 10% cut based on priorities, I would guess we'd probably cut items 12, 13, and 14. Item 14 is other funds. It's a new initiative. It's probably not prioritized highly because of that, but there's no real reason to cut it because it's other funds. And without a discussion of the program itself. The state's dollars, and I think any time we prioritize, we're going to end up prioritizing in favor of services, direct services to children, direct services to family, over state administration. However, if you eliminated all of that, the rest of the system would completely fall apart.
It does change
rapidly.
The program somewhat, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing with the positive youth development of ranks 12, 25,000 in general fund, 450,000 in federal funds. I would kind of doubt when the dust settles that we'd really want to eliminate that. So I guess what I'm saying is, even though we have prioritized, there's going to have to, if we are in a situation of making cuts, there's going to have to be, it's got to be much more subtle than eliminating the bottom programs. It's going to have to be a cushioning and a reevaluation of probably cuts through everything that they're doing, but proportionately more at the bottom of the list than the top of the list. But I don't think we should. I don't think it's going to be a hard, fast line.
Well, the idea of prioritizing is to actually get away from the concept of cuts. It's to change it to a concept of funding. That if you have a limited amount of funds, then by prioritizing, you're essentially saying that the legislature becomes a purchasing agent, and we are to buy the most efficient, the most effective, the most desired programs that the people want, and then when the money's gone, we quit buying. The idea of the cuts is that we're short of money, so let's just do across-the-board cuts and all this, and you keep watering down the soup or eliminating delivery of services and maintaining bureaucracies, which is contrary to this concept of what are we getting? What are the people getting for the money? And so we're really purchasing agents, but as we go out to buy, we're not going to buy one program but harm many, many programs as a result of it. So there's not going to be any the board implementation of this priorities where, sorry, we only fund the first 33 out of 38 on the list, and so the rest of you go home, because there's too many other factors that get involved in it. But this whole process is very valuable in that it allows the agencies to come forward and have to respond to performance measures and to questions about outcomes and questions about the way money gets spent, because ultimately we need to know that the money that is being spent as efficiently as we can and make changes where we can make them, with full consideration of the fact that we have a political aspect to this which is beneath the surface but is absolutely huge. And before the final budgets are reached, that will have full effect. So anyway, but today we're dealing with a prioritization of this one commission. We have essentially vindicated what you've put forth. As you see, our choices are lining up very closely with what your commission has presented as priorities. And for that extra work and the fine information you provided, we thank you. And we thank you for being here today. But there's no sense in going into greater detail if we have a consensus.
Mr. Chair?
Final thoughts, yes.
Could I just, let's talk about block granting again a little bit more. Some counties, I think, are at a point where a block grant would work well because they have the resources to really get into evidence-based programs and design programs. But I'm not sure other counties are able to do that. They would like to get the money, and then enhance the programs that they have, but don't necessarily have programs set up with evidence-based outcomes like, say, Healthy Start has. And I make the comparison between public health nurses who go out and care for the medical concerns of babies and Healthy Start, and the reporting requirements for the public health nurse is not the same, and there's never been studies. Well, there are like the old studies, and I think they're doing something like this in Multnomah County, but my only trepidation regarding block grants is that it will go to counties and they will fund the programs that they already might have or like without taking a real look as to which programs are the most effective. It's not that I'm against that. It's just I think that needs to be talked about, and I would like maybe Mickey to comment on that.
Chair Richardson, Senator Mona Anderson, I think that's a good point. And when you look at block grants, if you take the dollars that go through the Commission on Children and Families, for the most part, other than Healthy Start, Relief Nurseries, and CASA, those dollars are already block granted. Everything else we do, both general fund and federal fund, if you look at each one of those funding streams, are an essentially a block grant. There are parameters around them because you at the legislature have said to us these are the ways in which we want those dollars spent. So if you look at the continuum prenatal to 18 years of age, those grant streams go out to communities and they make decisions locally based upon their local community, their strengths and their needs as to how they want to spend those dollars within that framework. We have had times in the past where people have said, maybe it's a county commissioner who's come and said, just block grant the money to us. And this is a true statement, if we want to take Healthy Start dollars and fund our juvenile detention facility, that's what we should be able to do. Well, what is the goal of that particular program? What do you want that program to do? With Healthy Start, it's a child abuse prevention program. That is the primary goal, to prevent child abuse. If it's Relief Nurseries, it is not only to prevent abuse and re-abuse, it is to prevent children from going into the foster care system. So you wrap around those supports. Very directed, very targeted to a certain population. And some counties do have the ability, they have more resources to do the evidence-based practice. But it all depends upon what your goal is. And as I say, most of these dollars are very flexible within those certain parameters all along the continuum.
Last question. To your knowledge, what is the purpose of early Head Start?
Chair Richardson, I am not as familiar with early Head Start as I would like to be, but Karen Van Tassel, our Healthy Start coordinator, probably could answer that question for you.
If you'd step forward, thank you.
Thank you. Chair Richardson and members of the committee, I also am not really an expert on early Head Start, but I am Karen Van Tassel with the Commission on Children and Families, the Healthy Start coordinator. And early Head Start is an extension, as in my understanding, and probably someone from Department of Ed would be able to answer this better, but an extension of the goals of Head Start, preparing children from low-income families to succeed in school. And it's been an outgrowth of the Head Start program, which started, I believe, with age 4, then it went down to age 3, and then they've extended it in some places to go down to very early, with the idea that early learning and early intervention can help.
Okay. The point is that we have, and I could ask about Fresh Start and about Cocoon and about a whole series of others, and they all have fairly narrow scope but tremendous overlap. In other words, if you keep a child from being abused, that's going to help that child be better, ready for education. If you keep a child healthy, that's going to help it to have better education. And so what we have is the goals to be accomplished, and they have to be accomplished on a local level, because I mean, you can't send a directive to parents from Salem saying, do better. So I mean, it's going to take local implementation. They have worthwhile intentions, and there has to be follow-up. And so as we're talking, you know, with Senator Bass and Senator Mona Sanderson about the, you know, how do you determine it? How do you evaluate it? Well, right now the evaluation comes from each of these programs. Mm-hmm. But the concern that we have is the amount of money and the amount of duplication in doing that. And so if we do block grants down to the counties, now we have another question, is how do we evaluate the outcome that would be better than the evaluation that comes presently in place? And so I guess from my viewpoint, I'm looking for a way to be more efficient and more collaborative so that we have less of a silo. I mean, they say, you know, everybody's overlapping, all this, except that many of these descriptions of goals are overlapping. And if you do one, you're actually doing two or three.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the confusion that I have, is mm-hmm. how do we have maybe fewer programs but accomplish multiple goals instead of each program having an initial or a focus mm-hmm. that really is not a unique focus.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
Oh, well, thank you, Senator Richardson and members of the committee. I could comment on that a bit. Oh, excuse me, Representative, I'm sorry. My thoughts on this are that this is all part of a system of supports and services for early childhood and for children and families at that early end of the continuum of age, and that although when you look at program goals, often they do say the same things as their goals, they have differences in target populations. For example, in Early Head Start doesn't exist in every county in Oregon currently. Healthy Start does. In places where there are both, it's a wonderful opportunity for Early Head Start to extend its services more to subsequent children. And that's a nice tie-in. Maybe the older siblings are already in Head Start. You know, there's ways that at the local level, when you see the partners that are at the table in that local community, they can work out the services so that they reach the broadest number of families by each one doing their particular focus and what they do best. We've been in a process with the Office of Family Health for over a year where we've worked with them to clarify and define the roles and responsibilities of the home visiting programs that they have that have more of a health focus, and the home visiting program of Healthy Start with its more parenting child abuse prevention focus, so that we see how we can complement, how we can avoid duplication, and how we can serve the families better.
Well, they all have good intentions. How
yeah.
do we judge these things? For instance, and this is off the top of my head, mm-hmm. I think, isn't Healthy Start's budget about $23 million? Is that
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And it's a voluntary program,
mm-hmm.
and it's focused on first babies, right?
Yeah.
And so you have, what, 44,000 births a year, or is it less than that? Do you remember what the number is?
I don't remember the total number of births, but excuse me, Chair Richardson, I'm sorry. But I do know the number of first births in Oregon in 2003-04, and that was 18,668.
Okay.
And that's about a third, they figure, of the total.
Okay, so it's 18,000.
Mm-hmm.
My recollection on the statistics for the benefit in evaluating Healthy Start was the lessening of abuse, and it took from I think the average was 20 per thousand, and it lowered it to 12 per thousand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you have 18,000 first births, and you have 8 per thousand, what's 8 times 18? That's about 160. So we have $23 million being spent to help lessen abuse, or which even could be verbal abuse, for 160 children, right?
Well, I don't believe that exactly follows, and let me run through it from a different way of thinking. In the first place, Healthy Start statistics are based on confirmed cases of abuse and neglect. And then, so both the 20 per thousand and the 12 per thousand, we're talking about confirmed cases of abuse. And then we know that even at all, these are relatively small numbers that rise to that level of being confirmed cases. Along that continuum of abuse and neglect, there are many phases in a family's life, many times when maybe the parenting practices are sliding towards that. There are also cases that don't come to the attention of child welfare, even with all of our interventions. So what's happening through Healthy Start in the area of abuse and neglect is a concrete measure in terms of those cases of abuse and neglect that we can all look at, and also other improvements in parenting practices that are not, that we can define in other ways through our status report. We have measures of improved parent-child interaction. We've got measurements around getting health care for children. We've also got measures of children being receiving developmental screening, and when child development problems are identified, receiving early help. And we do know that children who are developmentally delayed, who are not coming up to expectations, are more at risk for abuse and neglect. So there are many different ways that this program, with its measures that extend from that measure of child abuse and neglect, also impacts that number and reduces it.
Thank you. Senator Bates.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to go back to the block granting local control again. I don't know, Monty Anderson, I know, as Senator Monty Anderson has worked a long time as a public health nurse in this office firsthand. Yeah. I, as a practicing physician, see it firsthand also. It's not inconceivable that a family could be in a situation where they have one or two children at the child development center, have a child going down to the community mental health for counseling, they're on food stamps, they are receiving an Oregon health plan, they may have a child in juvenile detention situation or working through the juvenile systems, and you have the overlapping programs, and it's almost Byzantine. I can't help them get to the right programs, and they can't get to the right programs. They may be looking for daycare. They may have no way of picking a child up after school and getting that child to daycare. And I don't see at the state level how we're going to fix this. We've been at it for 20 or 30 years. I don't see it happening. And as much as everyone wants it to happen, and there's no bad players here, but, you know, you can look at a kid and it's in trouble at age 14, and the school says, that's not my fault. The child care system says, it's not my fault. You know, the dad says, it's not my fault, it's mom's fault, it's dad's fault, and we've got the kid in our hands in the juvenile detention center. So what I'm saying here in the end is I don't think it's going to be solved in Salem. A lot of money is pouring into the system, and we're not getting as much out of it as we potentially could. And I don't see it being fixed unless it's fixed at the local level, at the county level. I don't see any way around that. If we really want to make a change, with all due respect, I think we start block granting more down, and either the commission or group like the commission is going to have to step up and say we're going to fix this thing and we're going to make some changes. When I look at, as an example, the White City area, where changes have occurred, where people have done pilot programs that actually work, I know it can be done, but it's done at the local level, and we've got to take the strings off these things and open it up and let it go down there. We have to stop the competing programs. The fact that K-12 is not sitting in this room, the fact that you're not an expert, I don't expect you to be in Head Start. Head Start's not in this room. We did bring in daycare, thank you very much, and all these various programs. To bring them together, I don't think it can be done at the state level. I think it has to be done at the local level. And that's the direction I think we should go.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Senator Bates was mentioning, who's all the people that deny responsibility and fall. I think it's clearly the medical communities.
Yeah, absolutely. We got to medicate kids more.
I
agree. Right?
That's all of it. You know, we talk about the wonderful values of being able to pull ideas and goal setting and things together at the local level. Approximately half of the budget, though, is in the three programs that aren't block granted. And I'm thinking maybe we need to have some discussions in ways that individual counties could request from the Children and Families Commission from the state the ability, if they felt they were ready and they had the ability, request that their funds be blocked. And set up some type of a criteria for when we want to allow that to happen. Pushing dollars down on local commissions that aren't ready to accept that responsibility, or maybe as most of our volunteer organizations do, some go through times of incredible activity and strength and performance, and then sometimes there's times when they're not operating at that level, like the have to go through a rebuilding process like the Trailblazers. But but I'm wondering if there's a way that we could create options for local commissions to request their funds to be blocked now.
What would be helpful for us would be if you and your associates could spend some time together, and with the understanding that this committee is very interested in knowing how we could go about increasing block grants and without unduly burdening those counties that aren't prepared for it, and also assuring that we would have some outcome-based requirements so that we wouldn't lose performance. We would appreciate having that information. Could you get back with us on it?
Yes, Chair Richardson, we'd be glad to get back with you. And I would also like to respond to Senator Bates, if I could.
Please.
Senator Bates. You heard Tom Olson talk about Partners for Children and Families early on. As you remember, when you began on February 1st, Partners for Children and Families was the first group that came and talked with you about how are we coordinating, how are we connecting, how are we, or are we, really collaborating with one another. I hope you will be pleased to know that this afternoon I'm meeting with Catherine Bradley, the administrator of the Family Health Office through the Department of Human Services, also with Nancy Latini, who's in charge of early childhood and community partnerships with Department of Ed, Dr. Robert Nickel, who is the director of the Cocoon Program at OHSU. And that's just the four of us, but we are going to outline, and we are actually going to ask your permission to come and sit before you and talk about how Healthy Start, Early Head Start, Head Start, Even Start, Great Start, Cocoon, Babies First, all the starts and all those early childhood programs fit together. That's one thing. The other thing is what we have done in the last year with Partners for Children and Families is we not only have the state agency sitting around the table, but we have their local counterparts. We brought the local people in because, in effect, our role is to support local people in building their capacity to do whatever needs to be done on behalf of their local communities. More and more, we are understanding that. More and more, I think we are moving in that direction. The Queen Mary cannot turn around on a dime. So I say to you that our intent and our goal is to get to a place where there is no wrong door, and that we understand at the state level that our responsibility is to support local people in doing whatever needs to be done on behalf of the public good. And people are very encouraged by that. And you heard Tom say today, he's been in several other states. This state is the farthest along in that kind of collaboration. I was yesterday at the National Governors Association, paid by them every bit, for a one day on children's cabinets and what other states are doing. I found some wonderful resources that I think are going to help move us along in that particular direction. We are willing to do that. We stand ready, and we'll get you some information.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just real quick, a follow-up.
I have to be at an important meeting at 10 o'clock, so if we need to continue, then
we do too.
Yeah, we do too. Okay. I really want to know which counties
would not do Healthy Start, but still would like that money to do put it in to some other, you know, not all, you know, round. Well, we want to make sure we have the right fit for each county. And we're saying that if you want Healthy Start dollars, you have to do it my way or no way. And there may, I would like to know which counties would say, yes, we want to do something, but not exactly like what is required with Healthy Start. I mean, I need a feel for them. I think that's what you were saying.
And in closing, I want to dispel a rumor that has been circulating in this building about consolidation of programs. There is no basis to the rumor that we're going to consolidate these programs into one multiple start program.
Thank you.
Marathon start.
Marathon start. Multiple start.